Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name is Cosmo. Tonight, I'm joined by Glenn.
Yo.
We've got Eddie.
Good evening. No sultry lighting today, boys.
Yeah, it's looking fresh. I like it. What room are you in today?
Not the dungeon.
Dungeons under lock and key. And the voice you heard there is Jed.
Yeah. Jed.
Very, very informal today, I would say. But I would say off air, when we're just chatting among ourselves, the mood at first, I think, was properly funereal. At the latest result. Do you know what pains me is the fact that I think this is the season where we've been most consistent with recording, and we've essentially recorded the same podcast what feels like 60 times of just being completely miserable with Spurs, and then speculating who the next manager is going to be, and then speculating as to whether we might just stop watching it altogether. So, listener, you've got that all to come in this podcast. I hope I'm selling that to you nicely. But, okay, let's get chatting about the game. A game I did not watch, and a game I'm pretty confident that I'm the only person in the world who watched it, who sought out the extended highlights of, which, to be honest, there wasn't very many to go through. Let's go from the start. Glenn, you were fuming as soon as you saw the lineup. I think it's abundantly clear that Stellini is basically Conte Mark II. Slightly less annoying, slightly less aggravating, but in terms of system, it's exactly the same. And one of the first things I want to say, actually, I want to get in there early. I hate 3-4-3. I just don't ever want to see it again. I don't understand the system of only having not even just two centre mids, two midfielders. It's disgusting to watch. But Glenn, talk to me about the lineup.
Yeah, I don't know if I was even angry. I was just like, oh shit, here we go again. Like it was just the same old, same old. And you knew that over the time that had been given to Stellini, that week that he got to sort of prepare the players for this game, and the injuries that came in that week, he was just texting Conte, "What would you do, bro? Hit me up. What would you do?" Giza was sitting in an armchair in Italy, collecting his wages. Still managing the team. Like, there's nothing changed. In a week where so much has changed at Spurs in terms of managerial happenings, in terms of directors of football, in terms of injuries, same old, same old. Boring fossil football, no creativity in midfield. And I just wasn't ready for it. I thought there'd be at least a bit of a change in lineup, personnel, tactics, but from the start, same old Conte football, just with head chef from Ratatouille as our manager.
Well, I think the thing you would say, and you were saying offline, to be fair, is that it started a bit better, at least. Eddie, you were saying that in particular. Why do you think it started well, and why do you think it crumbled into something which was even worse than anything we saw under Conte, by all accounts?
I think the reason why we started well is because there is that kind of reaction type situation that needs to happen after the result at Southampton. Obviously, since then, Conte's gone, and there's been kind of a chaotic time at the club. But quite a few players like Richarlison, Romero, a few other players have come out and said their piece. Obviously, Richarlison wasn't fit. But like, also a lot of players didn't say anything about Conte, which obviously speaks volumes as well. And so there needed to be a reaction. And I think that's going to be part of the reason why the first half was actually largely positive, without a goal. It's hard to explain what the particular reason was for why we were so poor in the second half. I think the signs were there in the first half that, like, we did look potentially fragile. The difference was Everton were just really poor when they got the ball, in terms of keeping the ball, in terms of using the ball effectively, in terms of breaking, because that's how their team was set up. The large majority of Everton's chances came from some truly horrendous bits of playing out of the back. And that just came to bite us in the arse a bit more frequently in the second half. We'll get onto it, obviously, with the red card. But I think the reason why it looked so familiar is because we seem to sit back quite a lot anyways. But it seems particularly horrifying when you're a goal up and a man up to invite pressure, because we're not good under pressure. We're away from home, and the crowd, and we've never performed when the home crowd is up for it. And so you're kind of adding all those elements into a ready tumultuous situation. And to be fair to Lloris, he was poor on the ball, but like, we just didn't give him a chance. There's a way of bringing the goalkeeper back into the side. You try and take as much pressure off him as possible, and we were doing the opposite. And then in the end, you just get, you know, well, I was about to say you get beaten. We drew the game, but it feels like a loss. You get beaten by an absolute wonder goal. But if it wasn't that, it would have probably been another thing. It would have probably been like a corner, a header, a freak goal, because it was just coming. It's hard to explain, really.
Jed, do you think it might be a fitness issue from the grueling, infamous Conte preseason and stuff that came out afterwards? Apparently, he's been making players run like 2 kilometers on the day of games as well. Are our players simply too tired now to see out the season, or do you think it's just? Do you think these guys are just losers and mentally weak? What do you think it is?
Honestly, I think it's a mix of both. So the last point of that comment in terms of the players and their attitude and mentality, I don't need these weird Conte-ing freaks to sit here and tell me and say that Conte was right. We know he was right about the players. And I'm not going to go on some Conte right now, but he was never in a place. I mean, he's the manager. He's in a place to say that. But they just conveniently forget that he said the rest of the stuff about the club, feeding into all these bullshit lad Bible narratives. Oh, this is Spurs' history. Fuck off, first and foremost, fuck off. Apart from that, yesterday I was fuming. I saw a lack of desire from the players. A lot of players strolling around, so wasteful with the ball. Eric Dier, every single time he got the ball, he played a couple nice diagonals. Then other times he just thought he'd be able to run through the midfield with no one on him. Højbjerg's passing. How many times did he put us in trouble with his passing? And then he's shouting and screaming at other players around him. There was a moment where Romero got given the ball in the 6-yard box with 2 men approaching him, and he's just acting like he's down the part of his mates. So, and the worst thing, Eddie said it there, is that you knew it was coming. And that is, it's the most demoralizing feeling that you're watching a game and you have no faith whatsoever in your players to see it through. It got to the 88th minute. I put a £5 bet on Everton to win. And it very nearly came in. They scored 10 seconds after I put it on, and they had one more chance after that. And the thing is, it's not even sandbagging. You know it's happening. We knew it was happening against Southampton. I went for a shower at 3-1. And then in the shower, I was like, yeah, I know I'm coming out and it's 3-all. I know it. And it's not sandbagging. We know this. We know this with these players. And honestly, I can't continue to support these players at the moment. I can't. We bring in new players and they get infected. It's like they get infected by all the pre-existing players in that dressing room. No matter who we bring in, it's why it feels like we're constantly rebuilding. These players come in, they get like infected by these players that are in there. They will just become losers. I don't understand it. I don't understand why. And don't get me wrong, it's partly due to setup. because for the last 3 years, we've wanted managers who want to invite pressure onto a defence that can't handle pressure. And I just don't think the mentality of the players is right.
I think that's a good point, the thing you said about like the mentality kind of infecting the other players, because and the fact that it feels like we've been in rebuild for years, because people will quite often point out that like the only people that have remained since the Poch reign is Lloris, Kane, I suppose Davis that still starts,
and Son.
But the thing is, it feels like it's the same group of players, even though it's not. It still does feel like the same group of players, and it's just this weird kind of like almost like paradox. I don't understand how it's possible that all these players still do feel the same, and yet they do. I suppose it's because you have people like Sanchez, Lucas, who are still knocking around the outer reaches of the squad. That obviously doesn't help at all. Which, speaking of which, I don't know if you guys want to tackle the red card first or talk about the Lucas and Sanchez subs, because no. That seemed to absolutely kill the game for us. I mean, I've defended Sanchez in the past, but since that Sheffield United game, you could just tell he's just completely gone as a player. He's got the yips, and like putting him on at left centre back, that's never ever been a good idea. Even in a preseason friendly, that's not a good idea. So if you're trying to defend the lead, even if it is against 10 men, that's the worst thing you can do, is to put that guy on the pitch. So, you know, I was blissfully unaware. I was just checking my phone while I was out, and I was seeing, 1-0, like, yeah, maybe the good times could be back a little bit. I didn't know all these machinations were taking place. So tell me about how we crumbled. Unless you want to talk about the Harry Kane red card incident, which for me is just absolutely ridiculous. Can't believe that's even a thing, because when I watch the highlights back, it just looks like a straight red. I don't understand why there's any debate about Kane going down. I don't get it. But yeah.
Can I just remind people that Dembele, in our title challenging season, got a 6-game ban for doing exactly the same thing against Chelsea. So how is even a question whether it's a red or not? I don't know. Do you want me to move on to Sanchez?
Well, on that, Glenn, since you brought it up, I don't know if the debate is around whether it's a red card or not, because I think the majority of people seem to have agreed that it was a red card. Do you think anyone is saying that if Kane doesn't go down, though? Because we've seen it time and time again.
If Kane doesn't go down, does he get him sent off? No way.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's the reason why like other teams have gotten away with it so much, because you play your Uniteds or your Chelseas or whoever, and other teams are too honest, and they get these decisions that don't go their way, and then suddenly you've got this narrative that it's the big clubs against the small clubs, when realistically it's just that you're not going to get decisions to go your way if you go down. Now, if Kane dives, you have VAR, so that's something else. VAR can repeal that. We saw it earlier this season when there was a red card that was rescinded, even in our game. Was it not? Ziyech's red card. So Ziyech's red card was rescinded in game because it was perceived to be the wrong decision. And so that can happen. I just don't understand why. You know, for instance, if Emerson didn't go down, no one's looking at that. If Kane doesn't go down, no one's looking at that.
Yeah,
you'd like the fact of the matter is that you raise your hand to someone's face, and it wasn't like a push, it wasn't like a slap. He like his hands were gripped into a man's face. Like I don't understand what people want Harry Kane to do. Like this is not a street fight. I'm not going to firm it. This is a football field. I'm going to go down. I hate the narrative about like, oh, you have to be honest in that situation, blah, blah, blah. He's not going to get the decision then. Unless referees are going to be brave enough to make the decisions about players going down, then this will continue. And I don't think that people should be vindicated for that. If someone gets a tap on the ankle and then they go down like they're being shot, that's something else. but I don't understand how this is a debate. And, well, I do know why this is a debate. Yeah. It's because Harry Kane plays for Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's the reason. So
people like Henry Winter as well, gaffing in on it. My bro, buddy, you work for a reputable newspaper and you're sitting there saying it's embarrassing for Kane.
That you have a 240p DP, bro.
You work for the Times and you're out here trying to get bites on Twitter. That's why I don't listen to anything these lot are saying. Like you said, Eddie, it's because he plays for Tottenham. I'm 100% sure none of them actually mean what they're saying. They're just trying to gaff in on this Twitter culture of just trying to get bites off everyone. It's fucking embarrassing, bro. It's the clearest red card you're going to see.
Yeah, and there's also the precedent of when Kane supposedly dived against Arsenal and he gets TV brought out by Sky Sports after the game and he's asked to watch it back. The guy's an England captain. I can't believe the way he's treated.
They don't treat him like it.
No.
Sometimes I wish to say, go fuck yourself. Retire. Obviously, you'd never do that. Retiring from international football. Fucking deal with it yourself.
Bro, the fact that players like John Terry were protected through racial allegations at the time of being England captain, and then Kane gets vindicated for being possibly one of the best, like, an honest sportsman in the Premier League, it's just astonishing to me. Kane is nothing but a model player. And I don't know, it boggles the mind.
Whatever club he moves to next season, I guarantee he won't be scrutinised this way. I guarantee it.
100%.
For whatever price he goes for as well.
Even if he went to Newcastle, which is a new, uniquely horrible thought that's entered my head, but they would love him. They would be like, he's the king of the Geordies, all this stuff. Yeah. Like, it would be disgusting. They would love him. They would never treat him like that. And the way Newcastle are being treated by Sky Sports, I'm sorry, it just says everything about the fact that it's not a conspiracy. These media companies, they like clubs more than others, 1,000,000%. And Spurs are not a liked club. It's not only are they not a liked club, it's a way to just farm likes and content at this point. It's just to shit on Spurs. There's another parallel that I wanted to bring up, because the whole Kane incident, it did remind me of something that happened to a Spurs women player. I think it was a Spurs women player against Man United, where a United player pushed her in the face. So she went down to demonstrate that she'd been pushed in the face. And then the Spurs player who was pushed in the face was banned for 2 games for like unwomanly conduct or something, which for me was just completely misogynistic. I could not believe that I saw that at the time, because everyone knows that if it was Sunday league, I'd do the same. If I get pushed in the face, I'm going down. This is just what you do in football, is part of the grammar of football, like it or not. That's what you do. It's not the 70s where they show that clip where that guy punches the other guy in the face, then the referee's like, let him punch you back and then shake hands. Those times are long gone, man. Those times are long, long gone. So, like, it's so hypocritical, like you say. The way they treat him, the fact that John Terry was lauded, still is lauded. He's just been put on the Premier League Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that he racially abused, was it Anton Ferdinand?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand the kind of the media scrutiny towards Spurs. And then it looks like from a winning position, Stellini sets fire to it by making some absolutely dreadful subs. We've kind of hinted at it enough, and I think most people probably would have watched this, so we don't need to go into it in too much granular detail. So I'm going to link it to the next thing that I want to ask. Do we need to just bring in another manager now? Because is he actively harming whatever chances of the rest of the season we have?
Yeah, we do. We need to bring in a new manager now, but no new manager will come into this team at this point of the season and be happy. It's as simple as that. If the manager wants to play 4 at the back, we don't have the facilities anymore due to injuries. If the manager wants to play 5 at the back, we know exactly what's happening. We don't have the facilities in midfield to play and a more expansive 5 at the back with an attacking midfielder, because all of our attacking midfielders have been loaned out, and our more progressive defensive midfielders are both injured. So who's going to want to come in at this point of the season with the injury list as it is, with the director of football situation as it is, with other teams having 2 games, 3 games in hand on us? They're in a lose-lose situation if they take over the team as it is, because the table flatters us because we've had 2 games extra than the teams around us and 3 games extra than Brighton. These teams are going to catch up if they win their games in hand and go ahead of us. So the manager who comes in is going to look like they've fallen back places, when in reality, they haven't had these games in hand to play. They haven't been able to show what they have. So if I was any sort of manager right now, any manager wanting to be the Spurs manager, I'd tell Levy to fuck off till the end of the season. That he can pay me £100 million to come in now, and I'd say no. He could promise me £500 million summer if I come in now. I'd say no. There is a lose. Whoever comes in right now, it would be a lose-lose situation.
But there is still nearly a quarter left of the season, though, Glenn.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
Because the season clock is 9 games.
Yeah, we've still got to play Brighton, Newcastle, Man United, and Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's four of our 9 games still to play are against teams in and around us who are way better than us.
Villa as well.
Villa as well. That's 5 of 9 games that against teams that have been way better than us in recent weeks. No manager wants to come in right now to Spurs, no matter how much they get paid, no matter what they get promised. Spurs is a mess. I'd rather go to Chelsea. If someone was to say to me, come into a team right now, either Spurs or Chelsea, you'd 100% go to Chelsea. I hate Chelsea. I hate what they've done with, like, basically farming young players and putting them on 8-year contracts and holding their current players to ransom, having like a squad of 40 players. The new manager will hate that as well, but you'd rather go there because you can't go down. You can't go further down because the next team behind you is like 10 points behind. Honestly, Spurs is a hot mess right now. No one wants to touch Spurs. At the end of the season, you get a clean slate. You'll probably get a lot of money to spend. You get some money in from the players that are already out on loan and possibly go into other teams permanently, such as Winks, Ndombele, etc. And you'll get some money to spend. And you can get rid of some of the deadwood in our team as well, Lloris and Dier, namely.
I think it says a lot that...
You take the job in the summer. You have to.
Yeah. It says a lot that teams like Chelsea, who are sitting in 11th, are a much more attractive prospect than ourselves. It says a lot that Brighton seems to be a more attractive prospect to De Zerbi than ourselves. It says a lot that... managers would rather wait until the end of the season to assess their options rather than come into the team. No one wants to be having this conversation. We don't want to be having this conversation on the podcast where we're basically shitting on our own team. But that's the reality. The reality is that we've got to this end point now where there are too many things going wrong for us to just like ignore them. Like, we've need to replace Lloris for like 2 years now, and now we desperately need to replace him. We've needed to replace Dier for ages, and now we desperately need to replace him. We needed like a proficient wing back, and we may be getting a Doge back in next season, but this season is what, another write-off, the way that the last 3 seasons were also write-offs. You look at our midfield situation. We brought in Bentancur and Bissouma, who are now have long-term injuries. And then you're left with the dross that we already had. And we already got rid of like 3 central midfielders. And then you bring in Richarlison, extremely poor this season, had major injuries Yes, like, but again, it's just like it took so long for us to address these problems, and then we supposedly addressed these problems in the summer, but we haven't really. And now we're in a position where these are just that these are so extreme that we can't ignore them. On top of the fact that now we have no director of football, we have no manager, and we have no direction. Where does the club go from here? And it's not happening at the end of the season. It's happening whilst we're in a critical point of the season. And before all of the, before we were talking this way, a month ago, or just over a month ago, we were in three competitions and we were in the top four race. We were in the top four and we were still having a bad season, by the way. We talked about this as an awful season. But this was the path that we were on.
This is the path. That's the thing. Exactly. We all knew this was going to happen. We all knew this was going to happen. The fact that the club didn't see it is ridiculous. And the fact that people kept saying, oh, we're in three competitions and we're fourth. It was ridiculous because we all knew that fourth is a false position. And what Glenn said right now just demonstrates it. Because we've played more games than everyone, that's why we're still in fourth. But we're not the fourth best team in the country. We're probably on course to finish like eighth. And personally, I kind of do hope that we do, just so that we avoid the conference. So we don't get in the conference league. But the one thing I would say is that to see out 9 games, basically tanking our season like this, is, well, I just don't think it's possible, because you can tell how pissed off we are already. Can you imagine the stadium? Like, it against Brighton, the stadium is going to be such a toxic atmosphere. You can't do that for 8 more games.
And imagine how the players are feeling as well. I mean, and I know, look, there's been very little sympathy for the players in all of this at the moment because of Conte's comments. And obviously, I've just gone on a rant about the players 20 minutes ago. But if we as fans are feeling this way, and the players are clearly, they're clearly struggling. They were struggling with Conte's methods. And it's essentially, as Glenn said, it's more of the same. Without all the noise of Conte, they're still having to go through that same routine of seemingly Conte's training methods, the lack of flexibility within the system, the lack of freedom within the system. Why are they going to get up for these last 8 games? They're being made out like just because Conte's gone that they're all of a sudden free now and they're going to be able to sort of have this new freedom. That's not the case. You can. I visibly saw it last night, where a lot of the players were having digs at each other, and none of them really looked happy. And like you say, Cosmo, I honestly don't think it's ever been this toxic. I thought the end of Jose's reign was bad. I don't think it was anywhere near as toxic as it is now. It's awful now. It's awful, and I think these past few weeks, Levy has almost done irreparable damage to the club in terms of where do we go now? What manager can we even attract now? I look at someone like Brendan Rodgers, who I wouldn't even want, and I don't even think he would fucking go near us now. I don't, and you know what? I don't blame any manager for not coming here. Why would you? Why would you? We're a club in decline now. We are in decline because if we follow this trajectory, I think you're right, Cosmo, we come eighth. Maybe even lower, ninth. We lose our best player ever in the summer, and he goes to one of our rivals. What's attractive about that? What's attractive? And if we don't get European football, there's going to be no money to spend. And how are you going to get rid of the Deadwood? Because Levy's going to ask for 20 million for Sanchez, who's paying that? 20 million for Winks, who's paying that? I really, really fear this managerial search is going to be just as bad as the Nuno one, because as Eddie said, we're without a director of football. We're waiting for that hearing, which is 2 weeks from now. Well, Chelsea got rid of their manager 2 days ago and they talked to 5 or 6 managers already, but we're waiting for our criminal director of football, allegedly, to wait for this hearing until we decide what we want to do. So we can't talk to no one now. Because we seemingly have this blind loyalty to this guy, who again, we've mentioned him before, it doesn't even suit us. So what are we doing?
He could be in pen in like 2 weeks.
Exactly. What are we waiting for? Just get rid of him now. So we can actually begin this search, because it seems like we're just waiting for that. And then we're going to be like, oh yeah, we'll start looking now. Leicester's probably a better, if Leicester stay up, they're going to be a more attractive offer than us.
Right, let's go to a little break and then we'll come back for part two. Right, in the midst of all that chaos that you were describing, Jed, there is a feeling that the nuclear option for Levy, and something that he feels is on the table, is to reappoint Poch. It is something that would get all the fans on side. The away fans were chanting his name throughout yesterday. But he has to act quick, because it's looking like, as the managerial merry-go-round goes on, I think he'll take the Real Madrid job. I think Nagelsmann will go to Chelsea, and I think Poch will go to Real Madrid. So then we're left with real second-tier managers. I mean, seeing Spurs fans twerk for company, it's kind of... I can see he's a decent manager, he's doing a decent job, but come on, man, we're a top six club. I know we've been beaten
everyone
down.
Everyone just did the same face.
Yeah. We should be looking higher than this, man. It's like a Swansea 2010-11 appointment, like that. Let's be real. So, talk to me about the nuclear option. Do we just appoint Poch now?
Oh yes. My god!
It's always been yes. It's always been Pochettino or Nagelsmann. Like, Pochettino was number one for me. He's the only one that keeps Kane. He's the only person who keeps Kane.
I don't know. I don't think he guarantees keeping Kane.
I feel like I've been doing this every week, where I keep on saying no to Poch. And every single week... No, this is the thing, because let me land, because every single week I get closer to you, Glenn. Every single week I get closer to you by saying, fine, we should do it. But there's a reluctance there. You know why? Because the history is there. Why are we going backwards? We're already going backwards as a club. Why would we go backwards in our managerial search? It's not like a Gus Hiddink type situation. It's not like a Jose Mourinho type situation where we get, you know, the old uncle back into the club. He'll steady the ship, and then, you know, we ship him off to the next one. If Poch comes back, then he's going to have the keys to the kingdom again. I don't trust him to do what he did. I don't trust him to do what he did again. The situation was dire when he came in the first time, but this is bad in a different way, because there was room for us to progress the first time. This time we are in such a stagnant position. And at the time when Poch came, there weren't that many clubs that were vying for those positions. You didn't have the Villas, you didn't have Newcastle, you didn't have Brighton, right? And at the time when Poch came, there was still the traditional top four. Arsenal were flailing at the time as well. And now you have pretty much every team in the top half of the table vying for those spots. And the gap is not far. It's not the same situation from when he first came in. And I think if he comes in now, do not trust him to be able to ship out the deadwood, to introduce a new style of play, because that's what he will need to do. With the players that we have, with the money that he may or may not be able to spend, I just don't believe in the fairy tale ending of that story.
But one thing I'd say to that is, since he's gone, we've got worse. We've got much worse since he's gone. It's been far less enjoyable. So going back to him, I don't think would be a kind of like such a negative move, because I think he played more positive football than we have played since he left. And also, why not allow him the keys to the kingdom if the alternative is going to be Vincent Kompany or Michael Carrick or Arne Slot? I mean,
Deserby's there.
He's not. No, he doesn't want to come to us.
He's not there.
I really do think that I said that Brighton potentially are more attractive to Deserby, but realistically, that I think Deserby would agree to move to Spurs. Now, maybe that's just me being wishful. That's just wishful thinking. But if you give me the option between Deserby and Poch, it's Deserby like every day of the week for me.
Yeah,
every day of the week. And I love Poch. Like, that emotional connection with Tottenham, It was solidified. It was made whole. Bro, I was in tears when we got into the Champions League final. Like, I was just rewatching that post-match interview, like, time and time and time again. And I was there with Poch. And I would love it if Poch was able to come back and it be positive, a positive move. But I don't want that to happen. I don't want Poch to come back and it not be successful. And then that relationship also gets soured. That's my biggest worry.
The one thing I would say in favour of your approach, Eddie, is that like we kind of landed on Poch almost by accident. I think his biggest parallel was De Zerbi at Brighton. Everyone knew that he was ready for like a top six job. And when one came up, it was gonna be him. Always felt like it would be Spurs. And I think De Zerbi kind of does have that vibe. But at the same time, it did feel kind of accidental. We never would have employed him if AVB worked out. And that's the only thing that I say goes in Enoch's favour, because as much as I've been probably a supporter of Enoch in the sense that, look, when I started going to Tottenham, Tottenham were so shit in terms of the league table. Like, we were like nearly in relegation battles and stuff. And we've been on an upward trajectory since then. But I think you'd be lying if you said that part of the upward trajectory hasn't had a tremendous amount of failing upwards involved in it, especially with appointing managers. Harry Redknapp was appointed by accident. Pochettino was essentially kind of appointed by accident, I believe. I mean, we wanted Van Gaal, for God's sake. We wanted Van Gaal. He was the first choice. That would have been a disaster. De Boer was up there as well. That would have been another disaster. One accident that I feel like could be a blessing, could be Poch part two, is Postecoglou. I just got a feeling that it's going to work out. Glenn with links to, well, his dad supports Rangers, has turned the camera off at this point. But look, he plays good football and he's a nice guy. That's maybe I've been beaten down to a pulp by the last 3 years, but at this point, that's all I want.
You've been abused. Been abused by Mourinho and by Conte, and in between that, you've been abused by Nuno, because there's no way you're saying he plays good football and he's a nice guy, and that you're sold. That's crazy to me. That's absolutely crazy to me.
No, but the worst thing is, I think that's a lot of Spurs fans. That's actually a lot of Spurs fans now. They just want someone who's nice and someone who's actually going to play attractive football. That's how starving we are, bro. And I can't. No, I'm with Cosmo. It took me a while to win him round.
But yeah, Jed led me down the garden path on this one.
I was in his ear for a good couple of weeks about him. And I remember at the start, he weren't having it. Him and Glenn were on the same page. But he's there now. He's seen the vision. It's not long until you're there as well, Eddie. I know Glenn won't ever be there. But listen, I hear it.
But at the same time, like you say, it's not good that we're basing managerial searches on he's nice and plays good football.
No, but what else do we have? Because it doesn't feel like Spurs have a plan. So it's like, for me now, I'm seriously concerned about what I said before we went to the break, that we're going to end up with a Glasner or a Cooper. And look, I don't actually think Glasner would be a disaster. I think he's a good coach, but it's not what we need, obviously. And it could be worse than him, but the fans will not have the patience for it. The fans won't have the patience for it. And because we have no structure whatsoever at the moment, I fear that we get deeper into the summer without a manager and we end up panicking again. And that's why if they are fans of someone like Cooper and he's going to be available, I don't know. Look, they U-turned on Gattuso because of the fans, so maybe they won't be able to actually get Cooper. But I really don't have any faith in them getting this right again. I really don't.
Glasner just strikes me as far too much of like a bureaucrat. He's just like a generated face in a suit from FIFA. Like, we need someone charismatic. I think that's part of why I quite like the idea of Ange. even a part of me kind of wouldn't mind company, because I think we need a big personality or a charismatic personality that we can get on side with. I don't want another dickhead as our manager. I can't do it anymore.
I do worry with company though, that I know there's the video of him like going crazy in the dressing rooms doing the rounds. I don't think he'd be able to win around the dressing room, you know. I do think he would struggle. And look, he obviously had a really good playing career, and I think he seems like a decent bloke, but I think he would struggle to win the dressing room round. At Burnley at the moment, a lot of his success is being built on loan players and young players. Mm. And I think obviously like not the loan bit, obviously Spurs is one of Spurs' sort of things in their vision board or whatever you want to call it, is that we've always wanted to bring in young players and develop them, which is obviously a tick in that sense. But I don't know. It's obviously a lot easier in the Championship to do that, especially when you seemingly have one of the biggest budgets. You have a lot of links to big teams. And that's not me like discrediting the job that company's done. I think he's managed to turn Burnley from a very direct team into the complete opposite in the space of what, 4 or 5 months. So he's obviously done a very good job, but I don't know. I do think there's question marks there over him. And maybe he'll need to sort of have that stepping stone in between us.
Right. Let's talk about slot. Let's talk about slot then. I worry about the fact that we're already laughing about his name. I think that could be a factor.
Not trying to get cancelled.
Okay, I heard Nathan on the Extra Inch talk about him. He said that he uses a total football model, but where there are limitations are in the fact that he tends to use his 10 rather than being a creative player, someone to kind of get in behind the striker and kind of play as a forward. So a lot of the creativity comes from the wingers. With that being said, that sounds a great deal more attractive than anything I've seen in the last 3 years. What we've heard about Slot is that he's very enthusiastic about the role. We're down so bad. The fact that I'm saying it's good that this guy's enthusiastic to get the job is just, it says it all. I think he could be quite good. I've seen some decent stuff from his teams. But again, Jed, I have the same concerns as you do with company. I don't know if he's going to command that dressing room.
But then I think someone like him is like, if you are going to do that, that is, you commit to that. If you really believe in his way of football, which we should, because it's going to be an exciting brand of football, you let him just build the squad the way he wants to. You let him go and get some young players from Holland or wherever it's going to be, and sort of integrate him into the squad. Because at the end of the day, you're going to get the backing from the fans if they're happy with the football they're seeing. And I know it's not just going to be a seamless transition. It's going to take him a while, but I think you automatically get the buy-in if the message is there that he's coming in to play attacking football. Whereas with the past three managers, that hasn't been the case. And I think, they've been big names, so that obviously gets you only so far. But I don't know. I think it's because of the names we're down to now. For me, he's one of the top ones. I'm not going to sit here and act like I've watched a lot of his football, but I've kept an eye on the results, and they're getting very good results domestically and in Europe too. So for me, it's a lot of the names we were first linked to have seen out the window now. So it seems like it's probably going to be between him and Ange. Personally speaking, they would get my backing straight away. And I would be quite happy with it. But I know a lot of our fans just wouldn't stand for it.
Do we think Ange would leave Celtic?
No, not for us.
That's really bad.
No, I think he would.
I don't think he seems like quite an intelligent guy. And I think he knows he would be putting, not his reputation, because he's only managed in Australia, Japan and Scotland. So it's not so much his reputation, but I think he knows he has a good thing going with Celtic. And I think he is very committed to that project there. And as much as the step up is really, really big, obviously, and it's almost a job that you would think is too big to turn down from that position. I just think he thinks he'd be crazy to leave what he's got going at Celtic to come here.
But if he's that intelligent, which I'm not questioning that whether he's intelligent or not, but you would think that he recognises the ceiling is only so high at a club like Celtic, with like the domestic competition and the fact that realistically, no matter how good they've been in like domestically in Europe, like, well, pretty much since the times of like, you know, that time ago when Nakamura was playing for them, like since then, they've never really challenged in Europe. And if it's only the domestic competition that they're successful in, like, is that enough? I don't know about that.
I think for the meantime, I think he knows he'll have options coming up for him. I don't think it's going to be like, if you don't take this Spurs job, that's it. You're not going to progress from there. I think he can comfortably do a good job while there at Celtic, and he knows that a club more suited to him and his vision will come up. Maybe he does see Tottenham as that. I'm just speculating, innit? But say De Zerbi goes elsewhere, Brighton look at him. I think he would see that as a club that has a very the structure is very well established there. So for him, going somewhere like that would probably suit him better than going to Tottenham, where there's way too many things to do at once. The club's almost burning from the inside out. I think he would probably just wait for a club that's a bit more stable at the moment.
I would say there is opportunity within the instability, though. Like the fact that we are a massive club and we are a top six club and we have like this great stadium. If you're the manager that unlocks that potential, then your career is just going to fly. And then if he wanted to leave Spurs, he'd be looking at like Real Madrid, Barcelona kind of jobs. So there is that. We are still an attractive proposition. And yeah, we should be attractive for a Celtic manager. We should be able to take Celtic's manager, especially when you factor in the fact that Brendan Rodgers left Celtic like three quarters of the way through the season when he basically already won the league to go to Leicester, who were like near the bottom of the Premier League. So look, it's not even about the size of the clubs. Like Celtic is a massive club, but Spurs is just a better opportunity than Celtic. But yeah, no, I think you're right though, Jed. I think he will have reservations, but every manager will have this. Yeah. They don't know who the sporting director is going to be. They don't know who their boss is. They don't know if they potentially are going to be forced to work with a criminal. It's so up in the air. So Levy has to sort that, and he has to sort that very soon. Right. Do we want to do any more manager talk, or should we get into this article about giving up football for your mental health?
Oh my God. Yeah. Please, can we move on to that?
You sound like you can't wait.
Okay. So this article in The Guardian, I saw it on Twitter, really caught my eye because it was about this guy who, I think, after the World Cup, and after Kane had missed that penalty, he made the decision to give up football for 6 weeks, not even check the scores, not look at the league table, just give up everything about it and see if his mental health was actually boosted. This is something I think we spoke about this probably by coincidence, probably was about 6 weeks ago, where I reckon it was probably after the Arsenal result. So maybe a little bit longer. But I think we were all like sort of joking about it, but we're like, we just need to find new hobbies because this is so destructive. The fact that we basically have this podcast and it's cathartic and stuff, but I think the rest of the time, the amount of mental energy we burn just like thinking about who the next Spurs manager is going to be. Can you imagine if you could just have some surgery to remove that part from your brain right now? You would potentially be so much more productive. The other side to that is you would be removing a part of your soul. So let's set that discussion up. Is football worth the mental burden? What do you guys think?
At the risk of sounding kind of like there was that video, obviously rest in peace, that video of Claude when he was talking to Robbie, just saying that, you know, football's all that he has. It's an escape. It's something to like look forward to on the weekend. And there is a degree of that to every football fan, not necessarily in the sense that like it's the only thing that we look forward to, because, you know, far be it from me to speak on everyone's behalf, but I think everyone is like has a relatively like good thing going on with their lives, that they're busy, they've got friends, and they spend a lot of time with people that they love on this podcast. And so I think we're in a position where we have other things to look forward to, but there is like this the degree of like almost like a religion to football, where it's something that you like, you think about through your week, you buy in, and you know that there is like millions of other people who are in the same church as you, and you're kind of, whenever you're playing next, like more than anything, whether you're invested or not, you know that your team winning is going to make you 5 or 10% happier at the minimum, and it can make your day at the maximum or week. So I just think that like with that a level of buy-in, and the fact that we've like been doing this for 20 plus years basically, and it's hard to let go. And so yeah, potentially you just have so much more time on your hands to do things, but like football is like ingrained into our DNA at this point. When I'm playing football, I'm thinking about Tottenham. And so when I'm playing FIFA, I'm thinking about Tottenham. And when I'm watching other teams, I'm thinking about Tottenham, whether that's a good or a bad thing. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just, I would love to be able to not care, but the fact of the matter is that I'll continue to care. But I guess as a kind of like a byproduct of getting older, like it has to start to affect my life less, just because I've just got other things that are genuinely important. Like when I was younger, like if Tottenham lost, then my week would be finished, because I have to hear about it in school, I have to hear about it on the radio. Like that was just my life. But now, you know, we've got work and we've got hobbies and stuff. I'm angry, but like in the end, it feels just rather frivolous, because we're talking about multi-billion-dollar organizations.
Yeah, I would say, so basically I think I went through a period where I hadn't missed the Spurs game in years. And I can separate that into two periods. I think I can literally remember the first time I missed a Spurs game was when I went on a date when I was like 16, and it's when Spurs beat Newcastle 5-1. Nasser Chadli scored a beautiful goal, and like that was so far and few between that I could remember that. And then I think a year later I also missed a game against West Brom when we were in a yellow kit in about 2015. That's the amount like I just watch every single Spurs game. But I would say, to be honest, it's pretty much all down to Conte this season. I think he made it so unpleasurable for me that I genuinely had a ticket for Milan, the best seat I've ever been in at Spurs, where I was literally by pitch side. I just remember thinking, I just really don't want to go, because I just don't want to have to spend my money, which, let's be honest, with the cost of living crisis and whatnot, is scarce at the moment. I don't want to spend money on something that is kind of making me feel quite miserable when I'm there. There was a game which we lost against Liverpool and Arsenal at home this season. I literally took the long route home so that I could walk for longer and just gather my own thoughts. That's not healthy. You shouldn't be doing that. So I think I kind of like took the opportunity to kind of step back a little bit. And I think I would be lying if I said that my life hasn't got a little bit better since I kind of drew myself away from it a little bit. Not that I won't go back, but I do think when the club is kind of on this kind of bin fire that it is right now, especially with the Paratici situation, I think it's kind of, no matter how much of a big fan you are, it kind of is okay, I think, to take a step back. The other aspect to that is that it's not the same club that we started supporting when we were kids. We're literally called clients now. We're customers. We go to this massive, amazing spaceship stadium. But that's not the Tottenham I fell in love with. The Tottenham that I fell in love with had a stadium that was falling apart, and it was more about going to the kebab house before the game and like going past the program seller and stuff. That's what it was about. And yeah, like I wrote in the notes before that the kind of like the social contract has changed at Tottenham. It's not the same place of worship anymore. It feels a lot more kind of capitalistic, and it is like an exchange of money in return for entertainment, whereas it did used to feel a lot more like a community thing. So I kind of think if you're so pissed off with the club at the moment that it's kind of affecting you, which I think a lot of people are, I think it's okay to take a step back for a bit.
It's hard. Like Eddie said, it's you know what, there's been so many occasions this season where I've said to you guys in the group chat, I've had to delete Twitter just because I don't want to hear all the noise about Spurs. I don't want to just be constantly looking at all these negative things said about the club. And listen, you guys know me. I've been the most pessimistic Spurs fan that you lot probably know for the longest. and in some way, I actually think doing this podcast has made me not so pessimistic and not just like so doom and gloom about everything. I know we joke on the group chat about it, but I think I've become a bit more balanced in that sense, but especially more so this season. And I think you're right, Cosmo. I think it's just the Conte effects where...
And Arsenal.
Yeah. You know what? I wanted to say this, actually. I don't... For me now, it's not even about Arsenal. I came to terms with the fact that I think they're going to win the league months ago. For me now, the most upsetting thing is about what's actually happening to our club. And I'm more focused about just sort of, not that I can do anything, but I'm so worried about, and there's so many, it sounds insane me saying I'm so worried about the club. There's clubs far, all over the country that are struggling at the moment. Everton could go down and they might not even be able to stay afloat anymore. There's teams in the Football League getting point deductions left, right and centre. So Spurs being in fourth is definitely not the worst thing in the world. But for me, it's just like all the noise, the way the club is making me feel at the moment, it's just not worth it. I feel like I put so much energy into supporting Spurs. It seems to be the thing I think about most during the day. There was a point last week where we were, all the links to managers were hotting up, or when Conte was about to get sacked, I found myself just refreshing Twitter every 15 minutes just to see if he was sacked. It's not healthy. I shouldn't be doing that. So you're right. It's crazy the hold that football can have on some people. And I think taking a step back and sort of reflecting on it, as hard as it can be, it's needed. And I definitely think, listen, if things continue the way they do next season, I think that might be the cue for me to actually do that. I feel like I'm almost at that point now, but I just can't let go yet. I don't know where it is.
No, I'm the same. Like even yesterday, I was just like obsessively checking my phone. Looking for the score update. And I really thought we were going to make it at 1-0. I was gassed, and still it's like a gut punch. Like when you see the notifications come through. Also, the other thing is like for anyone thinking like, you say you've stepped back, like you're less of a fan. Like you should see the amount of messages we still send into the group chat, like me included. Like it's still so much energy being burned by it. But Glenn, I thought you'd have an interesting perspective on this because you are the only one out of us who has a season ticket, and your season ticket is not cheap. And I was thinking, you know, I said to you, I was like, if it was like £700 or something for the year, which I think would be a fair price, to be honest, as a fan, I think that's it's still expensive, but that's probably, it should be something around that. then you're more inclined to take the rough with the smooth. But when you're paying the prices that they want us to pay, it's a tough decision. So what are you thinking on your renewal?
Well, if you didn't hear that, I just sighed bare loud because, I've actually just been thinking about it during the podcast, like kind of reflecting on the fact that we don't have a director of football. Our best player is leaving the club. I want him to leave the club because, honestly, I think if he stays any longer, he taints his own legacy at the club because of the way we're going downhill. The director of, like, obviously, director of football's gone, no manager. And Daniel Levy, the rumour is about to ask to increase every single season ticket by at least 5%. And I don't know how I feel about that. For people who are in a much worse position than me, spending a much, how do I say this, you know, like, in a nice way, a much larger proportion of their expendable like money on their season ticket, I wouldn't be doing it anymore. And I'm almost close to not renewing, and it's given me some of the most incredible euphoric moments. Being able to go to these Spurs games with friends, family, sharing moments with people. But I'm not sure at this moment whether that is sustainable for me, because it's expensive as it is. And the uncertainty is just, it's made me feel very different about my season ticket, because before it was that community and like, seeing the same people every week. But the worse we play, the worse the form gets, the more it becomes an experience rather than a community. And it's not the same people sitting next to me every week. It's very different people. It's, I don't want to shit on people because they buy tickets and they're not Spurs fans, but they come over to London for a holiday and they want to experience a football game. I don't judge them at all because it's a good experience, but it's not the community that I thought I did sign up for when I first bought a season ticket. And that's kind of whatever. I've gone to a lot less games than I said I'd go to this year, simply because of losing interest in the way the football's been played. And just the feeling that it gives isn't the same. Yeah, it's just long. Like, I enjoy it and it gives me great moments, and it will still give me great moments towards the end of the season, like going on in the games that we have. But with the uncertainty, I don't know whether the money I pay is worth the experience I will have next year, if that makes sense.
I think the fact that we've only had one really good performance, which was against City at home, for the whole season, I think it justifies that we are like this, because I was starting to think like, oh, like someone say that like the good times are going to come back and let's gas ourselves up basically. But we've been absolutely starved. Like when I think about like the good times recently, obviously you did have that whole thing, Chelsea, when we beat Norwich.
We beat
Chelsea. Yeah, Chelsea was good. I can't lie. Yeah, I felt good after Chelsea.
Chelsea and West Ham were good games. Yeah. I didn't even go to them. I was away on my jollies in Singapore and Thailand. My brother
was games. For you. Suffering away abroad. But like even last season, like with the Norwich game, like Conte immediately came out and just poo-pooed stuff. Like, I don't know, I just feel like it's been so long since we had like that Leicester moment, which was in itself like a mini Ajax. And it's just, I just want us to play good football again, man. That's why I want someone like Ange, and that's why we're down so bad. Like, that's why we just want a nice guy that plays good football. Like, it's so clear that the way to play football in the 21st century, in the 2020s, is to play on the front foot, is to play like a high pressing game, a zonal game. And yet we've just had these dinosaurs in charge of the club. So hopefully they get this appointment right.
I think the kicker for that article was that, in case people didn't know, the person that the article was about was a Spurs fan. So I think that's what we just need to make that clear. That's the reason why we included that, because we're talking about whether or not it's good for us to step away from Spurs for our current mental health. The guy was a Spurs fan. So everything that we've just said is something that he's very likely going to echoes. And so, I think, but the way it is now, there's only 9 games left of the season. It's very easy for us to be like, cool, for the rest of the season, I'm not too interested. It's whether or not that, come the summer, we're going to be like, okay, next season, I'm going to just pull back a bit, or whether we get pulled in, if an Ange or a De Zerbi gets, or even a Poch gets appointed. Because is that enough? I don't know. We can come to that at the beginning of the season. First game is against Nottingham. And then it's we draw 2-2. And then you're just okay, well, I'm kind of back in the same place that I was.
That is so bleak. Because I was so ready to be if we appoint a good manager, then I'm all in, I'm back. But I suppose, there's so many problems at the club. You just don't know if Levy's going to... Say we appoint Ange. Levy might just be you can have 3 players and then you got to keep loads of players.
And Kane goes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I was hoping we could kind of end it on a bit of a lighter note, but it's not looking good, bro.
Here's the thing. The flip side is, and we can end this on a positive note, is that whoever we play this weekend and we win, and for whatever reason Newcastle or Man United drop points, suddenly we're talking ourselves back into a top 4 race. And we're gonna sandbag. We're gonna say, yeah, we're in a top 4 race, but the reason the reality is that we're just kind of protecting ourselves because we think that we're gonna concede a loss in the next game. And if we win the next game, and then we win the next game, all of a sudden it's looking a bit different. So I'm not gonna lay my stall out and say that I'm gonna pull out and step away from Spurs, but you can see how we feel.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I mean, I've slightly gone away from watching as much as I used to, but I'm still invested. So yeah, boys, thanks for joining me. This has truly been, I think this has been the most therapy session out of all the ones we've done so far. So yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me. And if you made it this far, thank you for listening.